P.S. I Love Hoffman is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage Club related, head on over to cageclub.me. That's cageclub.me.
Iggy Pop! Amen! Let it rock!
I'm a fucking idiot.
Red meat, we crave sustenance.
I'm an artist.
Hello, my name is Jimmy Cooley.
It's fun to have some fun.
Tommy,
it's a tape thing.
Whoever she is, I'm going to find her and I'm going to hurt her.
I've spent the past 3 years learning Finnish.
I'm always home. I'm uncool.
This is a process of dehypnotization.
Shut up!
Need a little bit of water.
Hey, Hoff fans. Welcome to P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, our love letter to the remarkable career of the late, great Philip Seymour Hoffman. I'm still Brian Rodriguez.
And I'm still Kyle Reintree.
We're always home, we're always uncool, and we're always ready to talk about Philip Seymour Hoffman and all the wonderful things that his legacy has given us. Isn't that right, Kyle?
That is indeed correct.
Now, if you haven't been paying attention, you might have been like, wow, you guys slacking off. You missed your mid-month on the 15th. Wrong.
No.
Because we announced this change. It was like something that's easier for the network, and we didn't mind either. We're team players. I think that's fair to say, Kyle, that you and I are team players.
I'd like to think so. I mean, I know every once in a while I give people a hard time, but that's just me. It's the more you're irritated by me, the more I care about you.
But I think a team player can give someone a hard time.
Yeah, you challenge them.
Exactly, yeah. Challenge them. And maybe we challenged the Hoff fans this month or so because, well, it was a very challenging poll, more challenging than I thought, but we'll get to that. Just a reminder, we are now releasing on the first Monday every month and, of course, the third Monday of every month, which is today. So, well, as of the release date, you could listen to this at any time. You get it. So the first and third Mondays of every month, you'll hear from us.
Yeah.
Kyle, we had a very busy month, actually, very busy time of the year. And these mid-months, sometimes we're like, I don't know, there's not a lot of news. But whenever it's like award seasons, that's when we get a lot of stuff.
Some great stuff. Yeah, definitely.
So if you're listening to hear the winner of our crazy, crazy poll that pitted two polarizing films against each other. They're not polarizing films, but compared to each other, you know.
Yeah, which is just the true juxtaposition of both and just like what they were in his career. Very different.
Very different. And we asked you Hoff fans on social media, whether it be on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook, we asked you guys, you know, what do you want us to watch February 1st? Whether it be Capote, whether it be Along Came Polly. I know, Kyle, as much as you like Capote, you were rooting for Along Came Polly. It's gonna be an interesting one. So we're gonna save the answer to that at the end. And before we get into all this great Hoffman news, just want to remind you that you should hit that subscribe button, whether you're listening to us on Spotify, on, I almost said iTunes, but it's not, Apple Podcasts.
Apple Podcasts, yes.
Google Play or Stitcher. If you're listening to us on all those great platforms, hit that subscribe button. Maybe give us a 5-star review. Maybe, you know, write a positive review. Or, sorry, I meant 5-star rating. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
And it's not about us, Kyle, right?
No, it's, I mean, you know, we're just trying to, you know, keep up this this man's legacy. And it's a strong one. I mean, it might not even need our help, but it's just us showing our appreciation for his performances. Because God knows there's some of them that are just, that help me out. Sometimes I need to watch a performance of his to make me feel better or to make me just feel, you know, I don't know. I'm not trying to get all sappy right now, but not feel like alone sometimes. Or like he's just a man that just played a lot of vulnerable characters and just really like, you know, very open and out there. And I appreciated him and his like, you know, raw performances.
Absolutely. And something we discuss a lot on this show is his potential performances, whether they be today or during his career, because there's always like rumors of roles he would have played. And actually, like through digging through the news cycle and finding all the Hoffman stuff worthy enough for this podcast, I found an interesting one that I'd never heard of. First, I'll ask you a question, Kyle, because I don't know the answer to this. Have you seen the Howard Stern film Private Parts?
I have, multiple times. I enjoy it.
Okay, okay. I figured you did, but it's nothing we've never really talked about that film, and I know that sounds weird to other people, but we've talked about a lot of films, so I figured it would have come up in the decade plus that I've known you, but, you know, a lot of films.
Yes.
So, if you recall, there's a character in it played by Paul Giamatti, the great Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, Paul Giamatti. I don't know, that sounds like Little Nicky.
No, but they have, I know what you mean. We love Paul Giamatti on this podcast. We talked about him, you know, a number of times, but I guess most on the Ides of March episodes. In Private Parts, like, Howard Stern's nemesis is played kind of by Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, he plays like the like a radio station manager, I believe, or something like that. For is it for CBS? He's like WNBC. That's Howard Stern trying to. He is not being a team player at first, but then he realizes maybe he kind of has to be.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's an underrated film, honestly. I think at the time, people were like, ooh, Howard Stern, controversial. But it's
I think it's
like
a good biopic. It's interesting.
Especially, like, on a world, like, we've seen so many film biopics.
Yeah.
But, like, a radio one, it was pretty cool. I mean, and Howard Stern, like, yes, very controversial, but, like, I mean, I think at the time, probably more controversial in terms of, I think we've evolved
like
a society,
shock,
you know.
Shock jock radio.
Yeah, exactly. regardless, so that Giamatti role, he was one of two choices to play that. The other choice, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Not Jack Black.
No, not Jack Black. So if there's like a you know that like less or more V, like turned over V sign?
Yeah.
If there's one of those in this era, I guess it was like Jack Black all the way at the end. Then Philip Seymour Hoffman and then Paul Giamatti.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
At least for this film, I guess, beating him out. So I thought that was interesting, and I could totally picture that. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think so. I could see, like, Howard, like, him playing along with, like, Howard Stern, and then, like, Howard getting, you know, under his skin. That would have been fun, but nothing towards, like, Paul Giamatti the person, but he just has a bit of, like, a snaky, like, used cars salesman, like, vibe to him in a lot of, like, he just does that really well, and just, like, the manager that, you know, just what the character ends up doing in that movie, I mean, he's pretty perfect for the role.
Yeah, I'd say so, but we have seen Hoffman play roles like that in the past. I'm thinking Punch Drunk Love, you know?
Not, yeah, no, that's
a little
that's
more
true.
Intense, but you know what I mean. Like, he can play the sleaze.
Yeah, it's true. It would have been interesting to see what he would have done with that. I don't recall, do you know off the top of your head when that movie came out?
Ooh, 1997. It's from the article I'm reading in The Hollywood Reporter. Betty Thomas was the director, and, you know, she just kind of was talking about it. The article is called, nothing to do with Hoffman, it's called Private Parts. Director Betty Thomas recalls crush on Howard Stern.
Yeah. So that's a young, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman. 1997, that's Boogie Nights, you know? Like, that's like Twister right before. That would have been interesting to see. Because Paul Giamatti, I mean, he definitely looks young in that film because it's 1997, but I'm sure he must have like a few years on Philip Seymour Hoffman, so I'm just like imagining him in that time, and like definitely seems like it would have been like the younger manager that has like something to prove, you know?
Maybe. I mean, it's nice to see though that he was even being considered for roles at that time. Like, he wasn't an afterthought, is my point.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and that's before. I mean, if it came out in 1997, that is before Boogie Nights was, which was really, as we know, you know, a breakout role for him.
Speaking of early roles, we just had a 20th anniversary of one of his, arguably another one of his early breakout roles. Maybe not a starring role, but one that I think a lot of people like started to notice him, because this was a big film. Any guesses, Kyle, what 20th anniversary we just
passed? Magnolia.
Oh, was it? That's not what I was thinking.
Oh, I think it was Magnolia. I'm pretty sure.
I mean, I'll have to go further in my notes. Let me see. Magnolia release. Oh my goodness, I was not even aware. These two films that I'm talking about came out the same month, weeks apart.
I was going to say, because I was pretty Sure, I just, yeah, like, yeah, release date December 8th, 1999 for Magnolia.
Yes, and but I remember there was one right after.
Oh, okay. Magnolia,
2 weeks after.
Happiness? No.
The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Oh, Tommy.
Can you believe that Magnolia and The Talented Mr. Ripley came out weeks apart? That's great, crazy.
Great year.
So they both celebrated 20-year anniversaries. I was going to say more... Well, Magnolia is more of a performance for him, and it's a classic P.T. Anderson. I think at the time, The Talented Mr. Ripley got more mainstream success. Oh,
definitely, yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't even thinking Magnolia. So huge then, 20-year anniversaries for these early career Hoffman films. And a lot of places, and yeah, now that I look at my notes, a lot of places were both talking about Magnolia and Talented Mr. Ripley. So, I mean, pretty cool when that happens. These anniversaries are great times to revisit. But you know what? You guys have not voted. Well, we haven't put Magnolia on the ballot, but we've put Ripley on the ballot a couple times and it hasn't won.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, Magnolia, I don't know, we've done a couple of long films, and that's like, you know, that's an up there one. So I think we need, I need like a lead up of like a couple of brief ones and then really deep dive into Magnolia.
Absolutely. I mean, not that I don't
want to
bring
on a third person to help us out with that one. I would just love another person, because that is just a film, especially the opening of that. I mean, it's a, you know, it's an out there film. So I love hearing people's perspectives on it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we haven't had someone else for our rewatches, but I wouldn't mind it, especially again for a long one like that. Again, not that it's bad, but that one is long. But Ripley, I think we'd have a lot of fun with Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah, spoiler alert. I mean, you know, he dies in that film. I'm trying to think if that's like...
In Magnolia, you're saying.
Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to think if that's like midway. You know, it's after Dickie. I'm just trying to think act-wise. Like, I was just going to say, like, we get him up to a certain point. But it's pretty far into the film, I guess.
I would say it's pretty far into the film. And it's really the inciting incident, you know. Not the inciting incident, I think the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, because, like, yeah, people see him, like, yeah, bringing the body and that kind of stuff. Definitely.
So, there's this website called The Stranger, odd name, right? But they Stranger, have this, okay. They have this great, I guess, what do you call them, a column, you know? I don't know. When I think column, I think of it so, you know, newspaper-y, not so much website-y, but... They have this column that I love that's called Unstreamable. Mm-hmm. And it's something we've discussed, Kyle, in the past, and I've certainly discussed on my show, High School Slumber Party, that there's this, like, maybe 2% of films that you can't stream anywhere.
Oh.
I mean, we've discussed it here, like, the ones we had to get DVD, like The Yearling or what was Strangers with Candy.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's just weird to think that, like, while, you know, tangible media is being... kind of just like pushed out and we're just streaming a lot of stuff, it would be awesome. Like I would love, I don't know, for someone to curate just like a ultimate like digital place to rent a movie. You know, it's not like a streaming service that you pay monthly for that has the rights to them, but maybe you just like rent it digitally.
I mean, most movies today are trying to get that.
Yeah, but I'm just, yeah, all these, obviously the past however many decades of films now, you know.
And Roku has a great thing where you could just search it and it'll tell you what it's available on, which is awesome. But there's another Hoffman film that I did not even realize was unstreamable. Maybe it was at the time, but do you recall how we watched the film Happiness?
How we watched the movie Happiness?
I don't remember any trouble, but apparently it's not streamable right now.
I mean, it's something that, I mean, I remember we had Ann Potts on as a guest, and she was able to watch it too.
Oh, actually, now that I recall, it was unstreamable because we all had to watch it through nefarious means.
Oh, okay. Which is perfect for that movie.
Absolutely. You're not going to believe the headline, but you probably will, of this article. That's how it, like, you know, caught my eye. Now, guys, I'm quoting. This isn't my language. The infamous movie with Philip Seymour Hoffman and tons of cum.
Jesus.
Yeah, so while I was searching the news, if you will, that caught my eye. We'll just say that. It's a great article too by Chase Burns and Jasmine Kemig of The Stranger. So how about you, Kyle? Any other eye-catching headlines of in the Hoffman world that you saw?
I hope. Well, the Godfather himself sent it. We've got a little group chat on Facebook Messenger called Hoff Bros, appropriately named, and he sent us an article from the playlist talking about the best film performances of the decade. And it, I think it's oddly, it's like they did like 63. I'm looking at the article again because I was curious how many there were. And I, from the first page, I see it's like 63 and it starts with James Franco and like Spring Breakers. Guess what there, Hoff fans? Our main man, PSH, came in number one with his performance in The Master. I'm so happy. The people at Playlist have, you know, I know they're waiting for it, but they have my blessing. They have my love, my appreciation.
Academy evidently didn't.
No, they didn't. He again lost to Christoph Waltz for his performance in Django Unchained, much the good guy version of Hans Landa, which he won Best Supporting Actor for in 2009 for Inglourious Basterds.
Oh my god. Still gets me mad, but whatever. That's why I don't watch award shows.
But yeah, just pretty cool. Let me just see right now. You know, it just says, Philip Seymour Hoffman's turn in The Master is not, in fact, the actor's final performance. That distinction goes to The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 2. But we weren't exactly sure, because then also at the end you had, like, God's Pocket and all those. So, I don't know where...
Yeah, final performance is a little bit tricky, because what does that mean? Like, when he shot it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. When it was release date and stuff like that. So, I mean, yes, by all means, it definitely... Yeah, it definitely wasn't The Master, so we know that. But, and yet, many cinephiles view Hoffman's galvantic work in PTA's, I abbreviated Paul Thomas Anderson there, but obviously it didn't matter.
Yes. Paul Thomas Anderson. Honestly, if you found yourself on this show, you probably know what PTA means.
Yes. P.T. Anderson's evocative parable about faith and his quote-unquote last performance. So it's just, you know, I mean, a quick little, I mean, it's like a couple paragraphs. Maybe we'll share that along when this episode comes out, maybe on Facebook or whatever. It's just, you know, nice to see. I mean, before that, it's Mahershala Ali for Moonlight came in number two. Isabel Huppert, I'm sorry, I actually don't know her. I don't know that actress or movie, so I apologize. Cate Blanchett in Carol, Lupita Nyong'o in 12 Years a Slave. So, you know, Kirsten Dunst in Melancholia. Those are all, you know, Javier.
Definitely a curated list, but I do agree with number one for sure. And actually, a little bit of Master news where someone else ranked it number one. Let's backtrack a little bit, Kyle.
Sure.
You know I'm a Friends fan. You know we've discussed Friends on your podcast on the great Thanksgiving episodes on foodie films, which, you know, I enjoyed doing. One of the most fun times I've ever had podcasting.
Those were fun. Two episodes, seasons 1 through 5 and then 6 through 10. Check them out, guys.
Well, Netflix waved bye-bye to Friends. Well, not their fault, you know, but
yeah,
you know, December 31st. And, you know, sometimes I'm tweaking, sometimes I'm binging, you know, looking to binge. I mean, sometimes I want to watch my Friends and I'm like, oh no, I got to wait till HBO Max comes out and it's $15 price tag. Yay. But until then, you know, Netflix did add some new stuff as they always do. And guess what? They added The Master. So if you, I know it's very different to Friends, but if you're a Hoff fan, you're going to want to see The Master, you know, if you have Netflix. And IndieWire, which is a site I really like, said that was the number one movie added on January 1st to Netflix.
Oh, very cool. I also saw The Invention of Lying was added, so if you want to see Philip Seymour Hoffman but not really speak at all in like 2 minutes, check out The Invention of Lying with polarizing and quite finally his last time hosting the Golden Globes, Ricky Gervais.
Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
But one last thing I'd like to bring up is that we are lucky enough to have interacted with Philip Seymour Hoffman's sister via social media, and his sister Emily is, you know, just always writes very nice things, and she commented, I believe, when we just posted about which films to vote for, you know, which are Capote and Along Came Polly, how her son, so Philip Seymour Hoffman's nephew, said to her recently, oh, what was that movie that Uncle Phil was in with the guy from Zoolander? And that just... That's amazing. Number one kid. I'm kidding. I'm not gonna correct Philip Seymour Hoffman's nephew. Zoolander, awesome movie, and that is Ben Stiller. And you guys know, you know my love for Along Came Polly. So that's just awesome. I love hearing Uncle Phil.
Yeah, and it makes me feel old too, right?
Yeah, like, yeah, it would make sense. Yeah, well, that too. Know. Yeah, Zoolander came out in like 2001,
2001, because. Yeah. It was like the movie of the weekend of September 11th.
Oy.
That's how I remember. It either came out the Friday before or the Friday after.
Yeah. If Philip Seymour Hoffman was going to be in that, imagine him as Mugatu instead of Will Ferrell.
I'd take it.
But, yeah, so that's just, I mean, it's kind of a special moment that's obviously just between, like, their family and talking about Philip Seymour Hoffman as Uncle Phil and his performances. But thank you very much, Emily, for... sharing that little tidbit with us, because that's just, those are the special things that I love hearing.
Definitely brought a smile to my face. But I'd have to say, Emily did not reveal a dog in the fight for this, what turned out to be an epic battle between Capote and Along Came Polly. So a little background of why we chose these films to, you know, put on the ballot for February 1st. Capote. I mean, I don't think we need too much of an explanation here. He won the Oscar for this. It's award season. The Hoff fans have been clamoring about it, clamoring for wanting to hear us talk about Capote. It was one of my favorite episodes. I think, yeah, it was our good friend John Harden on that one.
Yeah.
And I've wanted to revisit it because Bennett Miller is a director I tend to like. We saw and we talked about Moneyball. And I don't know, what were your thoughts on Capote?
I love Capote. I remember watching it, like, you know, right around that time of 2004, because he won, was that when we were seniors in high school, juniors in high school? I think it must have been when we were seniors. Either way, that is, like, the point where, I mean, I was full-fledged, I'm like, I'm a film nerd, I love it, I take in everything, and, like, definitely paying attention to award season, not for, you know, the clout of this won an award, but obviously they tend to be pretty good films, and films I might not have heard of, especially in that time. It's not like we were just going on the internet all the time and learning all these things about films, so if they weren't in the big, you know, movieplexes by us, we didn't really know about them. So anyway, I remember watching it when it came out and just not knowing a lot about Truman Capote, but it definitely made me want to learn more, and it's just a performance that really transformative. I love his relationship, you know, Capote's relationship with Harper Lee, but you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman's on-screen performance with Catherine Keener, so good. It's just it's a heartbreaking movie, heartbreaking role, performance. It's, you know, it's truly him winning Best Actor. There was a lot of competition that year, but just, it's fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. And again, it's a long time coming for us to do Capote. The other film... also a long time coming. It's Along Came Polly. And I know, it's not everyone's favorite, but we enjoy it. I know, Kyle, you've been championing this film for a while. It's
one
not
of the greatest comedic performances of all time.
Yeah, I mean, you said it right there, your feelings for this film. And we chose it because it is a love story. Not too many Philip Seymour Hoffman romances. And, you know, Valentine's Day is coming out. February, the month of romance, right? I don't know. You know, it sounded like something good to do, and
yeah, and we're giving it, like, you know, a second chance, just like all people looking for love deserve, you know,
or a third or a fourth or a fifth.
Exactly.
Anything else you want to say about Along Came Polly? Except that even though you like both these films, I'm sure you were favoring Polly.
Yeah, I just want to say, make it rain with them results right now, Brian.
Okay, Kyle. Well, the results are in. Wow. Like I said, this was a barn burner. This was a close one. Sorry to break your heart, but the winner is Capote.
And not by a lot, not, too. It's not that I'm not looking forward to talking Capote. It's going to be great. But, guys, it's not even Valentine's Day yet, and you're breaking my heart. You're breaking my heart. Oh, God. Okay, yeah.
Will Polly ever win?
We'll have to, I don't know, put it up against something that nobody knows. I don't know. That would be a true testament. Put it, like, we should look up to see what was his worst reviewed movie of all time. Not necessarily, obviously not probably be because of his performance, but just his worst reviewed movie of all time. And, like, or most obscure movie that no one's seen, so why would they vote for it? And put it up Joey against Breaker. It. Joey Breaker, probably Schuller. or what's the other, that early one, The Getaway, or, you know, yeah, a bunch of those. And, yeah, it's truly an underdog now, and I root for the underdog, so, not always, not like Philly in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but anyway. Okay, congratulations, Capote's and the Hoff fans that voted for that. I am very much looking forward to watching that and talking it with you, Brian, because it's an amazing film. It's not just an amazing performance that he deserved Best Actor for. It's an amazing film.
Couldn't agree more. Can't wait to talk Capote. We'll see what we can do about Along Came Polly, but can't wait to talk Capote. And that'll be, sorry, I'm scrolling through my calendar because it's not the first of the month anymore. That'll be on February 3rd. Not too bad. First Monday of February. February 3rd. You and I will reconvene, and we will watch that together. Remember, we already talked about Capote, as I mentioned, with John Harden, but this is a rewatch, guys, so you can watch it along with us. We're providing audio commentary, or you could just not watch it and hear us talk through it, which is fun, too, because, I mean, I do that sometimes on rewatch podcasts. Like, if I'm on the subway, I'm not going to watch the movie along with the people, but you still, it inspires good conversation, and I'm sure Capote will as well.
Yeah, like I said, can't wait to watch it. Can't wait to, you know, just, like, comment it on the way we do. I'm definitely going to see what kind of maybe special features the DVD, I have it on DVD, so I'll have to go get that to, you know, have it all ready for us to watch. I'm sure it's probably on some streaming platform, but I'm realizing more and more it's just, you know, nice to watch it from a hard copy, and I'll have to see what kind of special features there are, because it's a movie I really enjoy. I mean, Truman Capote in a film sense of his own, and his screenplays and everything like that. So just a really great movie.
Couldn't agree more. It just reminded me of one fact I heard about the Oscars, actually, that's tangentially related to Philip Zimmer Hoffman. Did you hear that this is the first time in a while that there's a category where everyone's already won an Oscar?
Oh, no, I didn't hear that. What category?
It's Best Supporting Actor.
Oh, okay.
And when I read these names out, you'll be like, oh, obviously. So Tom Hanks for Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood, Anthony Hopkins, The Two Popes, Al Pacino, The Irishman, Joe Pesci, The Irishman, and Brad Pitt, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
But Brad Pitt has won, like, producer, not for actor, though.
Yeah, no. I just said win Oscars.
That okay. They're all Oscar winners. Okay. That's, like, that's it. That's still, that's very interesting, but I was just thinking, like, everyone, well, I'm rooting, not only because Brad Pitt hasn't won, you know, well, and I guess those guys haven't won best, Tom Hanks has always won best actor, not best supporting actor.
Hopkins should have won best supporting actor, but that's a different story.
Yeah, and Pacino won, so I think Pesci's the only one that won best supporting actor.
Yeah, no, because even, you know, Scent of a Woman, right, was actor.
Yes. I mean, it is a movie about both of them, so I'll give, you know, it's like kind of Chris O'Donnell and Al Pacino. But yeah, so besides the fact that Brad Pitt is the only one that hasn't won for a performance, he is 100%. That's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is my favorite film of the year. So let's go Brad Pitt.
Now, you might be like, again, Brian, why are you bringing this up on a Hoffman podcast? Because the last time it happened was also in Best Supporting Actor category 7 years ago for the one we talked about, the one that Christoph Waltz won for Django Unchained. Because obviously he'd won the previous year. Tommy Lee Jones was nominated for Lincoln. And I think, honestly, he was the favorite that year between the two of them, Hoffman and Waltz. Philip Seymour Hoffman, of course, the master, as we discussed, and of course he won for Capote. But the aforementioned Robert De Niro was nominated for Silver Linings Playbook. And Alan Arkin was nominated for Argo, and he had previously won. So that was a stacked category, and you know what? That was a pretty stacked year. Maybe I was just watching a lot of film that year, but like that was an Oscars I probably watched all the films, and this one I'm like, yeah, I have seen like one or two. So different time in my life, different time for movies.
Yeah, no, it was a pretty good year for movies. I'm looking forward to seeing who takes away some of the, you know, the big awards.
Yes, you're more into it than I am. I'm
anti. I like the Golden Globes more, not because they like the awards mean something, but I like seeing celebrities getting drunk. If they have Ricky more fun, they're more like relaxed about it.
If they picked better host, I might agree with you, but I haven't been cool with their host selection.
Well, next year's Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. So.
And honestly, like, yay, Mean Girls, you would think I would like that, but it's like we've seen this already. Like, I want different hosts.
Yeah.
Like, that would be nice. Like, let's get some new hosts in there. Like, I'm just, everything's for the money. That's what it makes it.
Well, Academy Awards is no longer two years in a row now, no hosts. So it's either because that or they should bring Bob Hope back from the dead.
Maybe. I don't know. I like hosts. I really do like hosts. I don't like this no host thing just because it's...
I like hosts too. They just need to trim the fat. And by fat, I don't mean like the stupid ideas of the Academy saying like, let's combine the two editing awards or sound awards. I think they're doing, you know, it's just, I don't know. It's the whole mission.
Exactly.
Gosh.
This is why we don't talk about it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so silly. It's so silly. Anyway, it was a pleasure, Kyle, to discuss all this great Hoffman news. This was a big one. This was a fun one.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell the Hoff fans out there, if they don't remember for some reason, where else they could find you here on the Cage Club Podcast Network?
You guys can find me on Foodie Films. And Foodie Films, if you do not know, is a podcast in which it started out that I was talking only food-centric movies, which are great, and I still do those episodes, but I've been having a lot of fun and getting great responses to these kind of second episodes called First Cut, and it'll be like First Cut Pat LaFrieda, First Cut Dan Churchill, and those are people that have, you know, work and have achieved a lot in the food, drink, you know, industry, service industry. And recently I just got back from a 2-night, 3-day trip to New Orleans, my favorite city, especially for food and music, and I recorded 5 episodes. So in honor of Mardi Gras, which, I mean, Carnival and Mardi Gras season technically has begun, but during the month of February, because down there they really start up their parades and everything. So every Wednesday in the month of February, I will be releasing a First Cut episode from which I recorded in New Orleans, and the first Wednesday of March, which is right after Fat Tuesday and is Ash Wednesday. So that will be those 5 Wednesdays. You'll be hearing great individuals from the you know, all over New Orleans, and I can't wait because I had a blast. I love that city. It's really starting to feel like a home away from home, and getting to know people down there, I just had some really special conversations, so can't wait for you guys to listen.
Sounds exciting. Definitely excited for that. And of course, you can check me out on High School Slumber Party, which I talk about high school films, you know, films that take place in high school. And you know, we just released our 90th episode. So
wow, mazel tov.
Plowing through to 100. It's going to be an exciting year. It has been an exciting year, so can't wait. And can't wait for February 3rd when we talk about Capote.
Things are going pretty good in 2020 so far.
So far, so good. We'll put it that way. All right, Kyle, why don't you take us out?
All right, guys. Stay uncool.
Sex a thing, you. I believe in miracles since you came along.